5 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour. Welcome into the whole show powered by PDC Energy. I am Brady Hull. We've got Angel on the other side of the bulletproof glass. Thanks for being with us here today, live from the Aloe Fiber Studios. Well, we got a preseason game. We got some football to actually talk about on this Monday. And it was a Broncos loss. Doesn't matter. Don't care about the loss. How we got there throughout the course of the game, certainly something I care about. But 18-17, Arizona wins. They score with, like, I don't know, 2 seconds left. They go for two. We get it. They win 18-17. It's not the conversation, though. It's the first four drives. That's where we're going to go today. Russell Wilson and how did this offensive line look? All of that I want to get into. But to hear Sean Payton after the game, Angel, you know, hey, we're going to go back to the tape, analyze some things, go over it, do all that stuff. Well, here's Coach after the Broncos preseason loss.
You know, regardless of whether it's a preseason game, regular season game, you know, you just can't stand losing, especially in that fashion. We'll look at the tape tomorrow. There'll be a number of things that we'll be excited about. There'll be a number of things we got to clean up. And so, you know, we're in a race to do that now that we have, you know, an opponent on film against us. So we start from there.
If this were a regular season game, Angel, one of the things we would be talking about today is how Sean Payton managed the game, the end of the game. Because you're tied up, it's 10-10, and the Broncos have the ball, they're driving down the field, they get the pass interference call. If this were a regular season game, you run down the clock, right? You let the clock run, you get down, you make them use their timeouts, you get to the point where they're either wasting all their timeouts or you're going to score after they've wasted all their timeouts, or you're going to kick a field goal. But it's a preseason game. No problem with the way the Broncos said, you know, we're going to try to win the game by scoring a touchdown here. We're not looking at the in-game situation. But if this were a regular season game, don't you think Sean Payton would have been crucified today for not letting the clock run down, not forcing Arizona to use timeouts? But I'm not going there. Some people were really talking about the game management at the end and Vance Joseph's kind of passive defense there. I don't know how you get those guys that wide open on some of those passing plays. Wow. But you're not going to see every look that you're going to see typically throughout the course of the season. This is a chance to get your guys out there, find out who wants to, who you think can make this team, all of that. So I'm not, like, the panic button for me is not, I don't feel any worse, any better about the Broncos after the preseason game. So my tight-knit brewing poll question of the day is, based on what we saw Friday, do you see a turnaround coming for Russell Wilson? What did I tell you Friday, Angel? You asked me, like, what don't I want to see or what do I need to see? And I told you, I don't want to see a 3-and-out in that first possession. I don't want to see it look clunky for Denver.
Well, you ever done anything dangerous?
Yeah, first possession was 3 plays and a punt. Russell Wilson, pass incomplete, knocked down at the line of scrimmage. 2nd and 10, they run the ball for 3 yards with Perrin. 3rd and 7, shotgun, incomplete, short left to Cortland Sutton. And then you punt. Well, then you got an interception. Whoa, 6 plays into the Cardinals' second possession, the Broncos get an interception, and they drive down. They get 1 first down, I believe it was a quick pass to Jerry Jeudy for 19 yards. That was a nice-looking play. Then you run the ball, nothing. Then Wilson sacked. Then an incomplete pass to Perrin. And then you get Marr with the 47-yard, not 46, 47-yard field goal. No good. Wide right. So, first possession, 3-and-out. Second possession with a short field because of the interception. And a nice throw from Russ to Jerry Jeudy. You go down and you miss a field goal. Arizona gets the ball back. Denver's defense forces another 3-and-out. Denver's defense looked pretty good in that game, in that first quarter against Arizona. Broncos get the ball back. They drive down the field. This is the third possession now. This was about what we thought it was going to be, the limit for Russell Wilson. They run the ball a little bit. Russell Wilson completes a short pass to Cortland Sutton for a first down. Then another pass to Troutman for 14 yards. I mean, there were some nice plays on this possession. And then you had the dropped pass from Jerry Jeudy. Fourth and seven hits, and the Broncos go with another field goal. And this time it's not Marr, it's Fry. This is the third possession, by the way. I said it was the fourth. Third possession, Fry misses a 50-yard field goal, also wide right, and we still have a 0-0 game. Next up, you've got Arizona driving down the field, and Matt Prater goes up. He misses a field goal, former Denver Bronco. Now we get into the fourth possession for the Denver Broncos. Six plays for 57 yards. You got a couple of runs. Cortland Sutton getting very much in the mix here. And then the Jerry Jeudy play on third and four at Arizona's 21. It's just a drop. And so Denver said, no, we're not going to kick another field goal. We're going to go for it on fourth and four. Quick little slant there. Russell Wilson finds Jerry Jeudy for 21 yards and a touchdown. The Broncos score 7-0. So, a mixed bag in four possessions for Denver. That's what we're evaluating for the most part. Now, again, keep in mind, McGlinchey was out in this game, so you knew you weren't going to have your best offensive line. Here is an interesting stat for you, Angel. According to Warren Sharp of Sharp Football, preseason week one pressure rate. Russell Wilson faced the most pressure amongst any quarterback in the preseason. 64% with Russ. Meaning they were blitzing. They were bringing the dogs every single time at Russell Wilson. And that checks out because third on this list is Jarrett Stidham. Arizona was going at it. They wanted to see what their pass rush could do in a preseason game. So they were absolutely letting their offense or their defensive linemen and their linebackers pin their ears back and go after the quarterback. So the offensive line had a difficult time holding up to that. The tipped ball at the first play of the game for us, I mean, that was, you're causing chaos. That's what you do when you blitz. You're hoping to cause some chaos even if you don't get a sack. So how do I feel about Russell Wilson after four possessions in that preseason game? I don't feel any better or worse. I wanted to see this not be a struggle, not make everything look so difficult. And I had moments where I went, damn, that's how it's supposed to look. Cortland Sutton looked pretty good. Ooh, Jerry Jeudy there. That's nice. There's Troutman. But then there were moments where the offensive line wasn't very good, and then Russ didn't really read the situation. I'm not putting any real blame on Russell Wilson, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the fourth possession against Arizona's twos and threes is going to help me sleep easier at night. That's not like, oh, well, yeah, they got a touchdown. I just don't feel any better or worse. Fair to say. Holyoke says, be let down by special teams. McManus was the Broncos' second leading scorer behind Elam. What the hell? Kicking woes seem to be contagious. I'm genuinely concerned with our kickers. Would be ashamed to see Russ and the offense actually make progress. Your text came in backwards there for some reason. Only to be let down by special teams. Well, then this goes back to the whole Brandon McManus thing. This was one of Sean Payton's kind of first moves. He comes in, union rep for the Broncos is Brandon McManus, and he's kind of a free spirit type of guy. You know, messing around. He kind of fit with what Hackett was doing. And Sean, the Broncos released him. It saved Denver $3.7 million on this year's salary cap. But I don't think a lot of people saw letting Brandon McManus go as a really good idea. His production was down last year, but not by much. I think in his career with the Broncos, he was like an 80% guy as far as field goals made. Last year, he was like at 77%. So it wasn't that big of a drop-off. That was the game. I mean, you missed, how many did they miss? Three field goals? They missed three field goals in this game? Yeah, the first one by Marr and then Fry. Marr missed two of them, didn't he? I believe so. Yeah. Yeah. Elliott Fry was one of two. Brett Maher was 0 for 2. But they both made their special, their extra points. That was a big thing for Brett Maher, of course. Extra points. But that cost you the game. I mean, they were, one was a 50-yarder, okay. But you expect to hit one of those, if not two of those, but you missed three field goals in this game. You might have been walking away with a two-score game, you know, with Arizona getting that final possession there, and you'd be fine. But instead, missed field goals, kind of the story of this one. Nothing glaring sticks out. Yes, I'm a bit concerned about the offensive line. Arizona was bringing the heat like I haven't seen in a preseason game. Arizona wanted to win them a preseason game, Angel. They put on their Twitter account at the end of the game, the plain girl, the plain chick, the one that's like, that guy's not real. Well, they put her as Arizona, as a Cardinals mascot, pointing down the plane aisle, pointing at Russell Wilson working out on the plane, saying, that is not real. That guy is not real. A lot of people hated that and got really bent out of shape. Arizona deleted it. It's gone. It's a preseason game, though. I mean, if you're in trash talk, do it game one. Arizona's going to be a train wreck this year. So the answer for me on Russ, do I think he's going to turn around based on what we saw Friday? No, based on what we saw Friday, because it didn't move the needle for me. I wanted to see it not look hard, not look difficult. And a three and out to start this thing off. Now, if the preseason goes anything like training camp is gone, then I'm led to believe that Saturday is going to be a little bit better for Denver. Because Russ, it seems like, according to reports, has gotten better as the weeks have progressed under Sean Payton's offense. But I'm right there in the middle, man. I could see it click, and it makes everything a little bit easier, and suddenly Russell Wilson is getting back into form. I could also see it being a struggle bus all season long. Angel, let's get to the good, the bad, and the ugly from the weekend that was. The good, the bad, the ugly is presented by FMS Bank. Banking made simple. For more on FMS Bank, check them out online at fmsbank.com/KFKA. The good for me, I'm going to go with Jaleel McLaughlin, who had 4 carries for 20 yards and a touchdown. I thought he was running hard. I'd like to see a lot more from this guy. But, I mean, this guy was a stud at Youngstown. He was absolutely a stud. He had 1,500 yards, almost 1,600 yards in 2022, 1,200 yards in 2021, and then 700 yards in 2020. So I'd like to see this guy get more action. He did get a touchdown for the Broncos.
First and goal from the 4-yard line. Give to McLaughlin. And in for the Denver touchdown and the lead.
The bad for me is, again, the first few series. You had everything, a little bit of everything here. 3 and out, missed field goal after an interception in a short field, and then another missed field goal. That's the bad. The ugly for me is the kicking. That was what it was. I'm not going with the Rockies today as ugly. They get the time off, man. Take the rest of the summer off, time off for decent behavior. I don't care that you struck out 4 million times. The focus has now shifted. We are in the preseason. It's all Broncos on this note. So the ugly, you're safe, Colorado, because the kicking was so bad for the Broncos. And this is a first, okay, we go back and we look at a series of decision-making by head coaches. We go back to Nathaniel Hackett. It kind of started with the aw shucks thing that he was in when you got Russell Wilson. And then it was, oh, we're not going to play guys in the preseason. We're not going to do that. Those were all red flags. Sean Payton's first move coming in was, let's move on from Brandon McManus, a very consistent kicker. And that cost a game yesterday, or Friday. Friday was the time. That cost the Broncos a game. Now, it's the preseason, but is anybody extremely confident about kicking at this stage for the Broncos? And that's the good, the bad, the ugly, presented by FMS Bank. Banking made simple. 20 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour, Brian Howell is going to join me in the 12 o'clock hour, talk all things Colorado Buffaloes as we're getting set. No red there at Colorado Buffs facilities. Now, is that all campus-wide? Is that just athletics? Deion Sanders is plugging in to the rivalry. So we'll talk to Brian a little bit more on that coming up later on in the show. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy, a Northern Colorado's voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
Start your day with Good Morning NoCo with Brian Gary and Tanner Schwint on Northern Colorado's voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Kelly Lyle with the Fort Collins, Colorado, and your CSU Insider on the whole show on 1310 KFKA.
Wilson delivers, Sutton into the end zone, touchdown Denver. Was that an error to Sutton? The touchdown was to Jerry Jeudy. That must have been a little screw-up there.
The announcer error.
Is it an announcer error? Well, it was Jerry Jeudy, who had two receptions for 40 yards and a touchdown. And that touchdown came on 4th and 4, and Russell Wilson found him. There was a blitz there. There was people coming. Arizona was sending the dogs, but that was a nice play. I'm either or right now on Russ's performance. I'm not coming out here today saying he was awful. I'm not coming out here today to say he has changed it and turned it around. I liked the touchdown drive. I liked Sean Payton showing the trust that he could have in this offense to try to build some confidence going on. I'm not coming here telling you guys that I learned a whole heck of a lot from one preseason game. I think it was important to get out there. It was important to get hit a few times. You know, Russ kind of had a fumble there one time. He did recover it quickly, but it was important to get all that stuff done. I'm just not telling you that I feel one way or the other based on what we saw Friday. Do I think Russell Wilson is going to turn it around this season? It's like my meter is at 50%. If I have to predict today, I think you get McGlinchey back in this lineup once the regular season starts up. Javonte Williams is going. You have a little better idea what your tight end situation is going to look like. I don't think teams are going to blitz as much as Arizona was blitzing. I don't think you're going to see that. And if you do start seeing that, I think Sean Payton's a good enough coach to just make more and more adjustments. But if I'm guessing, turns it around. Maybe that's Broncos colored glasses right now. But I do think that Mike McGlinchey is a big part of what you're going to be doing at right tackle. And when you have a team blitzing as much as Arizona was on Friday, not having your starting right tackle hurts. I liked seeing Cortland Sutton get involved so early with Russ. 3 receptions for 35 yards. That was a big deal. I am curious to see how they're going to use the tight end situation. Is that going to be Adam Trautman, who had 2 receptions for 18 yards in that game? Is he somebody? Because I think Peyton really likes Dulcich, but is Trautman a better blocker, a better hybrid tight end than Dulcich is at this point in time? So I'm curious to see how that one goes. But yeah, I was excited to see Jaleel McLaughlin. Yeah, they misspelled his name on his jersey, but I'd like to see more from this guy, because we know that on the depth chart it's going to look like Javonte Williams, Samaje Perine, who had 6 carries for 26 yards. I like that game from him, for averaging just a little north of 4 yards per carry. Not bad there. But I want to see more from Jaleel. I'm really excited to see him. And again, I would imagine Saturday's game is going to look a lot like what we saw Friday. I think you're going to see probably, I mean, do you see a first half? Do you give them a half? Is this the game now where you call it the dress rehearsal? Are we going to see a full first half? Again, I think it depends on which team you're talking about. Does Sean Payton want to see more situational football from his offense and give them an entire first half? We used to see that. That used to be very common. Very common practice in the NFL was week 3 was dress rehearsal. You usually play a half. Sometimes you would come back out of the locker room and play one series. That has changed so much in the last 20 years, especially the last 10 years, and now the last 5 years. Some teams don't play at all. And now that you've decreased the amount of preseason games, week 3's preseason game now kind of looks more like week 2's. So I would imagine this week 2 is kind of your big all right, this is what we got. This is what we're the starting lineup we're going with here. Now, again, McGlinchey will not play. He's out for this preseason. So what's that going to look like? Does that change how you want to do things? Because I think, you know, once he's good to go for week one, you feel pretty good about your starting offensive line. I just am not sure if you're going to give them a full first half. I would kind of like to see a first half of football. No, not as much pressure because you know you're going to be able to come back out there. I mean, because the design Friday was not for Russ to go another possession. To darn sure not go for it, but they wanted to, especially after Jerry Jeudy dropped the ball. But Sean wanted to see more from the offense. And we asked that question, you know. It was supposed to be 12 to 15 plays for the Broncos for the starting group. You know, Russ threw the ball 13 times. Didn't get your over-under on the rushing there, Angel. Didn't do that. But you saw more plays than that, and that was Sean Payton saying he wasn't satisfied. They weren't satisfied and wanted to give them more of an opportunity, and I like that move. If the Broncos wouldn't have walked away with a touchdown on that 4th-and-4, settle for another field goal, make it or not, I think it's a little more uneasy in Broncos country today. But you got a touchdown to show for it. So I'm curious to see, and we'll hopefully learn more about this throughout the course of the week, what it's going to look like for the starting offense come Saturday. 31 minutes after the hour. Angel, let's jump out real quick and get the latest on the local Sports Flash.
This is Miles Blumhardt, sports editor at the Fort Collins Coloradoan, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
You want a place that has true customer service, one-on-one help as soon as you walk in the door. When you're working on a do-it-yourself project, something in the yard, you got to get something done you've been putting off, now's the time to do it. I know kids are going back to school and everything, but there's only so many weeks left of pretty decent weather to get out and do stuff. So take advantage of it and take advantage of what Hikes Ace Hardware has to offer. I mean, they're Greeley's original hardware location since 1954. That means you're doing something right. You know, my mother-in-law, she had to run and get something. She had to go to one of the big box stores in Fort Collins. And she was just telling us. She's like, yeah, I went to ask for this product. And then the people were there. They're like, yeah, well, you know where it is. Just go down the end of the hall. And they just kind of pointed her in the right direction. And then I was like, okay, I don't really know. That's why I asked. But here I am now. I'm walking. And she goes back. And then there's another person that says, no, actually, what you're looking for is right here. And so she didn't have to do all that. And it was a process. And I was just thinking about the folks at Hikes Ace Hardware. You walk in and you say, this is what I need. They're not going to say, oh, no, you go on your little Frodo Baggins journey and find it yourself off into Mordor. No, we're going to help you out. We're going to go find it for you. That's Hikes Ace Hardware. I mean, they got everything you need there. Benjamin Moore and Beyond Paint. They got window screen repair. That's something with some of the hail we've had throughout the summer. A rekeying and master key service, plumbing supplies, knife and saw blades, sharpening service. That's Hikes Ace Hardware. They have true customer service. Located at 1722 9th Street in Greeley, or call them 970-353-1416. Tony Aldemore, there we go, put together this Pac-4 expansion candidate thing and what it might look like for... Again, it's interesting to me, Angel, that we're still talking about the Pac-4 expanding. So is the Pac-4, is it not dead right now?
With the four teams still in it, it's technically still a brand of the Pac-12.
But they're actually going to try to make a go of this.
Yes.
And expand. And we've got now the talk is ramping up that they are going to try to be the aggressors and try to get some teams in. And I'm seeing Rams social media and Twitter feeds going all back in on the idea that they need to be in this conference. This is very interesting. It's like a turn of events here that we're talking about expansion candidates now. Tony Aldemore putting together kind of a unique graph here. He puts up a graph of athletic versus academic success, mixes them together, kind of shows the rankings of these teams He does another graph of total of budget, total athletic department versus football. He also does local population versus TV viewers. And then he does one more, football versus men's basketball attendance. So when you look at this graph, it's kind of confusing, but it just kind of shows you where some of the teams are, like the Pac-4, like the more popular, like Oregon State, where they sit right now. Their athletic versus academic success. They're near the top in this list. Air Force is near the top in this list. I'm trying to find Boise State. They're going to be up high in the athletic side of things, but I don't know about the academic side. Are they even in this list? He doesn't even have them in there, does he?
Yeah, they're on the left-hand bottom corner. You're 150.
Ah, okay. So success is good, but academic is probably a little interesting. CSU's just barely above Boise State. Now, that's all well and good. The budget, though, total athletic department versus football, its financial commitment to success in both football and overall athletics is important for any school seeking to move up. CSU's at the top of that, and I think that would be evident with what you see with Canvas Stadium and their facilities there. Omobi Arena, they made some edits. They've made some new additions there, a lot, and changing a few things. And so CSU's right there up at the top. That's a big one. Local population versus TV viewers. So where does CSU sit? Again, they're below teams like, you know, Fresno State, Oregon State's way up there. And again, these you're throwing Pac-4 teams in there as well, as far as AAC teams, Mountain West teams, and others as well. But CSU's kind of in the middle territory there. So the only situation, like in their football versus men's basketball attendance, where is CSU there, Angel? I lost them. I had my eyeballs on them. Are they middle of the road, or are they kind of toward the bottom there? Oh, yeah, they're kind of middle. Because, like, you look up, Memphis is at the near the top, San Diego State. So, like, they're mixing in football and men's basketball attendance. CSU has pretty good men's basketball attendance, but per capita of what you allow, or of what your cap is at Canvas, it's, you know, it's not overwhelming. It's not, like, big time. Oh, yeah, we got to fill this thing up. So they're kind of middle of the road there. There's nothing there at the bottom of the barrel in. Funding is big. Canvas Stadium is big. The fact that it's a beautiful stadium, that does show a bigger conference that they're willing to put some money into the athletic department. But where what they can control this season is their athletic versus academic success. Pac-12 leaders have always valued universities that excel across all areas, including both athletic and academic success. So CSU's still kind of, I mean, they're toward the bottom there, too. They're not really in the middle at that stage. Academic success is fine, but athletically, they had, when you were just talking about the big two, football and men's basketball, you had your March Madness run. But outside of that, in the last 10 years, 5 to 10 years, it hasn't. The success just hasn't been there on the field. But I just think it's fascinating here, Angel, that we are ramping these conversations up about the Pac-4 realistically trying to expand. I mean, I thought this thing was all but done. Can it be saved?
Yeah, I mean, as long as they can get enough teams together and Apple TV gets a deal done, then you still have a Pac-12. Whether or not it's a Power 5 conference at the end of the day is to be determined, but the Pac-12 as a conference and brand and name can survive.
I don't know. I think those are big ifs. Because you're basing it off of...
Well, like, as of today, the Pac-12 is still a conference. It still operates as a brand. It just has 8 less members.
I still don't think it's like a wise decision to go there. If Apple TV is the deal you're giving me, and we know what they turned down. Was that on Friday we talked about that? That it was reported that ESPN had offered them what? 30?
Yeah, around 30.
And they asked for 50?
Yep.
50 million a year per team. That's what they asked for. And they were offered 30. And ESPN's like, whoa, okay, you're way the hell off. See you later. And so now this is the deal that you're left with, is this Apple TV thing for, what, 20 million a year? And then maybe you get some, we add more depending on the subscribers and all of that. If you would you jump today if you were CSU, if they called?
It's tough because what does the Mountain West want to do? Where do you stand in terms of being with the Mountain West? Do you stand together or is it separate until the phone call comes?
It's more money today. We know that the Mountain West deal is what, seven? It's around $7 million
right,
per team per year. So you jump that to 20. Okay, you just increase that by $13 million plus more maybe if subscribers are starting to really pour in and they're going to pay you more based on those subscribers, which that to me is really interesting to try to figure out who's the one driving the – I mean, I guess you can see who's – but how are they going to tell? Like, they look at in-state, I guess? I don't know as far as subscribers go. But that to me is just scary. Yes, it's more money every single year, but for how long? How long is this sustainable? And if you're not a Power 5 team, okay, still, the money's still going to be the same. Apple TV is still going to pay you $20 million a year per team per year. And so losing out on the Power 5 thing. But if the Mountain West can stay aggressive and keep the majority of their teams, maybe they lose a team or two. Maybe San Diego State finally does go. I think Sean Keeler wrote about it in the Denver Post that CSU should follow whatever San Diego State does. If they stay in the Mountain West, stay in the Mountain West. If they go to the Pac-4, Pac-5, go to the Pac-4, Pac-5. That is where this conversation just gets so tricky because you're asking to project the next 5 years, which I guess is what you're always doing, but you're banking on Apple TV's success. What's to keep Apple TV on the air? Now, Apple as a business is doing just fine, right? But is their TV, is Apple TV as a business doing just fine? Don't think so. Do you subscribe to it?
No.
Okay. I don't think that it's doing just fine. So if that's where we're going to put all of our games for the next five-year deal, who's watching and when does that – there's going to be some paperwork in the contracts that can cancel these deals. If they take a bath in this deal, they're not going to keep going, I'm sure. And again, the deal's not really done, is it? 45 minutes after the hour. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. Before we break, I want to tell you guys about Steamway Floor to Ceiling, family-owned for over 35 years. They have a 4,000-square-foot showroom with tile, luxury vinyl, hardwood, carpet, granite cabinets, countertops, window treatments, and more at Steamway Floor to Ceiling. They've been doing it for over 35 years. Check them out online at steamwayfloortoceiling.com. 45 minutes after the hour, it's the whole show, powered by PDC Energy on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Mr. 700 Plus Wins is on KFKA. Coach Speak with Coach Bruce Dick. Weekdays at 10 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Kelly Lyle with the Fort Collins, Colorado, and your CSU Insider on the whole show on 1310 KFKA.
If anyone tried to get to me, you would have stopped them, right? When you and SJ were in that car wreck, what did you do to the airbag?
Stopped it.
You stopped it. You stopped it. This team is your family, Michael. You have to protect them from those guys, okay?
Well, that was a clip from Blindside, a movie from, what, 2009 already? Yeah, Sandra Bullock starred in that. It was the story about Michael Orr and this rich family that adopted him and saw the best in him and gave him the strength and confidence to go out and block and do all that stuff. Tim McGraw's in that, too, right? Yeah. Pretty decent movie. Did you see the movie?
Seen it a number of times.
Yeah.
Nick Saban's in it. As an LSU coach, it's a little weird.
Oh, yeah.
He is in that for a little
bit. How'd you feel about that?
Yeah, it was a different time. But it is one of my favorite sports movies, I'd say. It's one I will rewatch a lot.
Will you rewatch it now, knowing it's all a lie?
I don't know. I have to put it into the fiction category.
Well, it's a really positive story if it were true, but now we're wondering if it's not. Now, I'd heard some things about Blindside over the years. That even Michael Orr said things like it didn't happen quite like the movie said, but he still had a good relationship with them. They were still taking pictures. The Tuies.
Leanne and Sean.
And so Leanne is the woman played by is Sandra Bullock plays her in the movie. This one from ESPN. Michael Fletcher, retired NFL star Michael Orr, whose supposed adoption out of grinding poverty by a wealthy white family was immortalized in the 2009 movie The Blind Side, petitioned a Tennessee court Monday with allegations that a central element of the story was a lie concocted by the family to enrich itself at his expense. It's a 14-page petition filed in Shelby County, Tennessee probate court, alleges that Sean and Lee and Tuie, who took Orr into their home as a high school student, never adopted him. Instead, less than 3 months after Orr turned 18 in 2004, the petition says, the couple tricked him into signing a document making them his conservators, which gave them legal authority to make business deals in his name.
He actually made no money from that film.
Yeesh. And they did?
They made a lot of money. And their two kids.
He made no money from that movie.
He got no royalties or anything from that film.
That's jacked up.
Because they had this conservatorship, whatever the word is. They had basically tricked him into signing. His explanation in the complaint was that they had told him, if you sign this paper, it's going to make you a part of our family. It's not an adoption paper because you're under 18 or whatever the rules were. So they had tricked him with his age and that, it's just a different name for it. It's basically the same thing. He'll be a part of the family and that he is not a part of the family.
Wow.
This is a Oscar-winning movie.
Oh, and it was a great story. It's an amazing story.
Too bad it's not true.
Too bad it's not true. The petition further alleges that the Tuies used their power, and this is what Angel's talking about. Used their power in this conservator deal to strike a deal, paid them and their two birth children millions of dollars in royalties. That earned more than $300 million.
They got $225,000 plus 2.5% of the film's defined net proceeds. The film grossed more than $300 million.
they say that they've continued to call him their adopted son. He's 37 years old, and they still maintain that. So do they not have I'm guessing they don't have a relationship anymore.
I don't know. I know Leanne, she's like a motivational speaker, and she wrote a couple of books about this. This is just awful. If they've taken the life of this boy who is, less than in life and manipulated it into a story that they can, live off of, that's just awful.
And so some people are like, why is this coming up now? Well, Michael Orr discovered this lie to his chagrin and embarrassment in February of 23, when he learned that the conservatorship to which he consented on the basis that doing so would make him a member of the Tuie family, in fact, provided him no actual familial relationship with the Tuies. So he found this out in February of 23. So that's why it's coming out today. The family has not immediately returned phone calls right now.
The petition asks to end the conservatorship and also seeks a full accounting of all the money the Tuies earned using his name and have to pay him his fair share of profits as well as unspecified compensatory and punitive damages.
Wow.
Can you imagine a film made about your life and it's not even true and you didn't even know that it wasn't true?
Well, and, you look at, is the family taking advantage of this guy who's a giant amongst men, amongst boys when he was a high school player, and he was rising to the top, and everybody was starting to look at this guy once he got in, because they're like, dude, if we can just teach this guy a little bit about football, he's going to be really good. You don't want your brain to go to the Tuies, the woman, what's her name?
Leanne
looks at this guy and goes, ooh. We could take that guy under our wing. He's going to be the next big time star. We're going to take advantage of the situation. You don't want your brain to go there.
Because it doesn't start that way. In the movie, it doesn't start that way.
No.
It starts as just, hey, he needs a place to stay tonight.
And then he just happens to do some football.
Yep.
Play some football. And then gets really good at it. That is a wild story, man. Just absolutely crazy. And that is like one of the big-time sports movies. That's
it was a
feel-good. I mean, one of Sandra Bullock's best roles.
I mean, nobody really knew who Michael Moore was before this story came out.
And then he played for the Ravens, right, for most of his career. But I remember, and I don't know where I heard it. I just remember hearing maybe 5 years ago that the story wasn't.
Well, there was some stuff about the Ole Miss connections that were, weird.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they weren't actually a part of Ole Miss, like a board of boosters or something at the time, and all that. So, gosh, that's weird.
And if he would have been legally adopted, then none of this would be an issue because he would have received his share of money from this movie. But because he wasn't, he hasn't received anything. That is a fact, right? That is a fact that we know.
He got no money for a film about him and his story.
But if he was legally adopted by them, he would have, and he'd have claim to all of that, to all of what he could have earned.
He couldn't have negotiated it either because the TUIs controlled that.
The petition alleges that the TUIs began negotiating a movie deal about the relationship with Orr shortly after the 2006 release of the book, The Blind Side, Evolution of a Game, which chronicled the story. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so I want to hit some of this. We'll recap some of this in the lunch rush, too. Absolutely insane story. More on the Denver Broncos preseason game one from Friday night. Thoughts on Russell Wilson, this offense, Sean Payton, all that and more. And Nikola Jokic and Aaron Gordon. Talk about a bond there, man. Let's get into that. What were they up to this weekend? It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. We'll be right back.